from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Yeah, it's the Craig Needles podcast here on a Tuesday, recording a little bit later than normal today. And I'm recording and I want to share with you some audio that I collected this week about a story that I've been trying to cover as best I can on the podcast and trying to explain the developments as they happen. And this story is about the death of Justin Bourassa. And if you are not familiar with the circumstances that night, I did a podcast about this in June. Maybe go back and listen to that and just hear what happened that night and why. I had some questions about what we were presented by the Special Investigations Unit surrounding the death of Justin Bourassa. It's episode 84. Most of it holds up. There's some new information that we've got since then that I'll talk about with you on the podcast today. But most of episode 84 holds up here. Well, that came out in July, and here we are in November. It holds up. And here's what I wanted to catch you up on. So for starters, the SIU report, if you know the story, came out to end of June. I did a podcast episode in July saying, hey, what happened in the report here doesn't really add up. I'll give you the Coles notes of that, the quick notes. Justin Bourassa was alive at 3:49 and 36 seconds, had not encountered a police officer. Hadn't happened. At 3:51 and 1 second, Justin Bourassa was dead. He'd already been shot by a London police officer. And what happened within that 84 or 85 seconds, rather, we've got an explanation for it, but I just don't think the explanation makes a whole lot of sense. So within that 85 seconds, here's what the SIU report says occurred. The police officers asked Bourassa to stop and said he may have been involved in a break-in. They want to talk to him about it. They asked to search him for weapons. Bourassa was not armed. Bourassa had no drugs in the system. But they asked to search him for weapons. They asked him to turn to the west so they can do that. At this point, they apparently tried to put handcuffs on him, which SIU Director Joseph Martino says may have been overreach. We'll get to that in a second. At this point, they tried to put handcuffs on him. According to what the witness officer told the report, the witness officer is the person who winds up being choked in a minute, according to this particular narrative. That's when Bourassa escapes and tries to run off. There's a bit of a chase. Then Bourassa and the two officers go to the ground. All three of them go to the ground together. They try to get Bourassa up. The officer who was the witness officer drops his microphone, has to pick up that microphone and say into it, hey, we need some assistance here. We've got a suspect who's trying to escape, but there's too much interference over the radio. I have no idea how long it takes to figure out how much interference is on the radio and when it's too much to actually use it, but that's the situation. So, knowing all of this, at this point, Justin Bourassa, apparently, allegedly according to the report and according to witness officer, starts to put the witness officer in a rear naked chokehold that lasts for a minute to 45 seconds. That's from the report, 1 minute to 45 seconds. And that chokehold only ended when Bourassa was shot in the neck by the officer who was the subject officer here. Now, wait, hold on a second. The stuff that I just described, being asked to stop in the alley, being told that he was involved in a break-in, being told to turn to the west, search for weapons, a struggle after the person gets away, after Bourassa gets away, there's a little bit of a run, the three go to the ground, they get up, they try to use the radio, there's interference on the radio. That all apparently happens. Let's just use 45 seconds as the time of how long the choking was going on. That all happens in the space of less than 41 seconds. I just simply don't believe that to be accurate. There is something in that story that is not accurate. There has to be. Because of the 85 or 86 unaccounted for seconds, somewhere in there, 45 of them were spent, at least, 45 of them were spent with Bourassa in a chokehold. Then there's the time between the officer shooting Bourassa and getting on the radio at 3:51 in 1 second saying, hey, someone's been shot here. We need an ambulance. So let's just say that takes 5 seconds for that to all figure out after the shot happens. So all of a sudden, all the stuff that I just said to you happened between 3:49:36. So 3:49 in the morning and 36 seconds. And at the latest, the choking would have started at 3:50 and 11 seconds. That leaves us 35 seconds for everything that I just described to you to have occurred. 35 seconds. I just don't see how that all could have happened in the space of 35 seconds. I understand things don't take as long as you would think. But 35 seconds? We go to the rest of the report, where we find out there was no marks anywhere on Bourassa that indicate that there was a taser used against him, that there was physical force used against him, that there was a baton used against him. Nothing. Now, call me crazy, but if someone had me in a rear naked chokehold, wouldn't I start trying to punch them and kick them? Wouldn't that be something I was attempting to do? And if I was an in-shape London police officer, you would think I'd have some level of success there. Either as someone who was being choked or someone who was trying to prevent their partner from being choked. You would think one of the two of them would have had some success there. Again, this is a 2-on-1. It's Bourassa against two London police officers. And we're to believe that Bourassa not only was able to get the physical upper hand on one of these guys, but the other guy wasn't strong enough to try to pull him off of there? Neither of them were strong enough to do any damage to Bourassa in that moment? That's what we're supposed to believe about what happened here. Again, I would think that there are some questions left to be answered. Does it not feel to you like there is something that occurred here or didn't occur here that we have not been told based on what I've told you? And this is not information that I'm getting from sources or making up or whatever it happens to be. This is all stuff in a public special investigations unit report, which apparently is now being approved by London Police Service and by extension, the London Police Service's board. They seem to think that what happened and what the SIU has written down there is okay with them. A comprehensive, thorough review was done, and I'm satisfied with the outcome. That is what Deputy Chief Trish McIntyre said to me yesterday. I had a 15-minute conversation with her about this, which I do appreciate the Deputy Chief's time. I'm going to play that for you in a second. So no physical force used on Bourassa. No taser, no baton. That much we know. Now, you can say, hey, someone's life is in danger, so of course they go right to shooting. That's what the use of force wheel for London Police would tell us. Okay, maybe. I don't reject that. But if that's the case, if there was no attempt to use a taser, if there was no attempt to use a baton or whatever other physical force to get Bourassa off of the officer who is apparently being choked. The officer who did the shooting, what was he doing for that 45 seconds? What was he up to? Probably just yelling at Bourassa to stop choking? Maybe, I don't know. But if there was no attempt to use a taser, there was no attempt to use a baton, There was no attempt for either of these officers to physically harm Barras in any way, it seems. Or if there was, they somehow physically harmed him in a way that produced no evidence of that on his body. What happened from the time that Barras got one of the officers in a rear naked chokehold to the time that he was shot? What was going on in that 45 seconds? Well, I don't know. If there was someone whose life was in danger, if there's someone who was being choked to death by Justin Barras, which is what this report would have you believe, which is what London police would have you believe, if that's what was going on, what was that officer up to in that 45 seconds? Because it didn't go from everything is fine to life-threatening situation in the space of 45 seconds, did it? It's a heck of a lot quicker than that. So did the officer just yell at Barras for a half minute and then say, all right, I better use my gun? Why didn't that officer try anything else in the meantime? I asked the deputy chief about this. Again, you're going to hear that conversation coming up in a minute. Doesn't it just seem like there's something missing to you? Doesn't it seem like there are parts of this story that we don't know? Justin Barras was stopped by the police because they thought he was involved in a break-in. Now, Barras, as the police have acknowledged, not involved in a break-in at all that night. Not involved. But was anyone involved in a break-in that night? I asked the police about that too. Again, you're going to hear that conversation in a second. And they wouldn't tell me anyone had been arrested for being part of a break-in that night. Was there even a break-in at all? I'd love to hear the answer to that. Now, we're told that we're going to hear more about this, and we're going to talk about this in a second. We're going to hear more about this at an inquiry. And yeah, I would love to hear more about this at an inquiry. But that's going to take a long time. For now, Justin Barras has a family. They miss him, and they're wondering why their son or their brother was shot by a London police officer on October 28th, 2021. Because the answers they have received from the Special Investigations Unit, the answers they have received from London police, those are unsatisfactory. And I can understand why they would feel that way. I feel the very same way they do. Those are unsatisfactory answers to me. And I think that after listening to me discuss this, they should be unsatisfactory answers to you too. Now, at this police services board meeting that I went to on Monday, Deputy Chief McIntyre described the actions of these two officers as true excellence. Now, I've had some time to think about this since my conversation with the Deputy Chief, which again, you're going to hear. But are we sure that we want to describe a confrontation that goes from not being existent to someone's been shot in the neck in the space of 85 seconds? Is true excellence? Are we sure that we want to describe someone who sat and watched? This is, again, this is from the story the SIU has told us. Someone sat and watched their partner being choked and didn't use a baton on that person and didn't use a taser on that person for 45 seconds. And we're going to describe that as true excellence? What was going on in that 45 seconds during that choking or that minute? I'd love to hear the answer to that. This is the conversation that I had. I asked a few questions to Trish McIntyre, Deputy Chief London Police, who, again, I was very much appreciative of the Deputy Chief's time. And this was not an easy interview, I don't think, for her. It was not an easy interview for me. But there are some tough questions that needed to be asked here. And here is the conversation I had with the Deputy Chief in the moments following the Police Services Board. And my first question was about that true excellence piece I just mentioned.
You said that the officers displayed a true excellence. Tell me how you came to that conclusion.
I use the word excellence, and I just mean in the moment, at the time, when everything is evolving so quickly, that they were able to remain calm and follow process just to that letter, and follow the use of force wheel to the letter to make decisions, and having those decisions continue to grow and the situation itself to continue to escalate, but they were able to kind of delineate all of those pieces and still perform as, you know, as everything is laid out in procedure. So that was what I meant by excellence.
By my count, the witness officer won. He was still in his vehicle at 3:49 and 36 seconds. Justin Bourassa had been shot by 3:51 and 1 second. So that leaves us less than 90 seconds, during which at least 45 seconds was spent with Justin Bourassa having an officer in a chokehold. You have 45 seconds as a rough estimate for the amount of time remaining. There was a brief chase, but Justin Bourassa was asked to turn to the west so the officers could handcuff him from behind. Of course, the officers tried to handcuff him. Also in this time frame, there was a struggle. One of the officers tried to use the radio to alert other officers, but there was too much chatter. So this all happened in 45 seconds. That seems like a very tight timeline to me. Were you able to speak with either the witness officer or the subject officer about this? And are you satisfied that that timeline that the SIU put in their report is an accurate timeline?
I can say that a comprehensive, thorough review was done, and I'm satisfied with the outcome of the officers. You give specific detail, and that's amazing. I think we need to pause here because there's still a coroner's inquest. I am confident with those details will all come in, and that's speculation. What we know for sure, and this is what you're alluding to a little bit in the time, is that it was a rapid escalation. It was immediately the window of time. You're saying it's under a minute. We engage with the complainant in this case, Mr. Bourassa, and then there is a fatal shot. That is short. And I think that's what the public's like, whoa, that is fast. How does that happen? And that is the situation itself is what is driving that. And it's not that somebody is acting inappropriately. It's not something is wrong. It's that whatever was in front of them, again, interaction moves to a chokehold. The time was incredibly short. The use of force escalated rapidly. And that is the situation that was in front of the officers.
Justin Bourassa is a tennis pro. So fit guy, but at the same time, he got the upper hand on two London police officers at the same time. How did that happen?
I am not there at the scene at the time to tell. I can say to you, Mr. Bourassa was in excellent shape, for sure. Our officers, I would tell you, were in excellent shape as well. And when they were not able to use physical, with hands-on techniques to end that engagement, when it escalates this fast, that speaks to almost the skill of Mr. Bourassa.
There were no marks on Justin Bourassa to indicate that he had been hit with a baton. There was no marks on Justin Bourassa to indicate that a taser had been used against him. Why were those options not used?
That's not for me to speak to. The officer in the moment at the time has to assess what is going on in front of them and has to respond accordingly. We know that lethal force is used when it's life-threatening or death is imminent. The officer's perception in the moment at the time said that was what was about to unfold. The officer fired the lethal shot.
Witness Officer 1 was in a chokehold for 45 seconds to a minute. There was no bruising on Witness Officer 1's neck. How strong could that chokehold have been if there was no bruising?
Yeah, these questions, I understand, are frustrating, and I think you're going to see some of the details and this be more, you know, critically discussed at a coroner's inquest. It's not for me to get into a back and forth with you on these pieces.
But at the same time, you are the deputy chief of police, and you presented a report today saying everything seems to have gone fine here. So I think it's fair for me to ask, well, how did this go?
Sure. So our reports look into the officer's conduct, looked into video evidence, looks into the coroner's reports and all of these pieces. When the SIU comes to a determination that the officer's use of force was accepted, was reasonable in the circumstances. This is an independent governing body that oversees what we do. They agreed. No, that was right. The officers responded in accordance with the legislation, in accordance with procedure. They justified that the shooting was reasonable. So they rely, too, on the coroner's inquest and all of these pieces of evidentiary fact to come into play. The part of it is not just medical evidence, but what was the officer, what did they feel, what did they perceive in the moment? You know, it's not in isolation. It's not for you and I to armchair quarterback what they did or felt in the moment at the time. The officer has to look at that, has to respond accordingly. The officer, of course, is afforded sections under the criminal code which allow them to use that force. But I can't, in the quietness of, you know, LPS headquarters, understand fully what they were feeling in the moment at the time. What I have to do is look at their actions, their statements, what the video evidence says, all of the other all of the other pieces that were collected and look at how does it relate to our procedures and policies, et cetera. It's not up to me to say. Similar to SIU. SIU had all of that information available to them as well. They, too, found that the officers acted reasonably. So I would expect to see that a lot of these details, and there'll be questions, and I would think the public would still have questions, that we'll see those pieces come out in a coroner's inquest, which I think might be helpful for people.
You mentioned that the SIU had all these pieces. One piece they didn't have was speaking to the subject officer. Did the London Police internal investigation speak to the subject officer?
Yes. So why does the subject officer not have to provide a statement, just like you as an accused person in a criminal trial would not, the American version, you have the right to remain silent. In a criminal case, that officer doesn't have to speak, right? But in conduct investigations, they're compelled. So that, you're right, the subject officer was compelled to come in and provide an interview.
When the subject officer spoke to the internal investigation, what did the subject officer say when asked about other potential escalations of force that were not lethal?
What I'll get into, what I'll be able to tell you is that those were flushed out, that sequence of events was flushed out, and we were satisfied.
Was there anyone ever arrested for a break-in on October 28th, 2001?
How does that relate to Mr. Barassa? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if anyone was arrested for being involved in a break-in on October 28th, 2001, because Justin Barassa, as we know, was not involved in a break-in.
He was not involved in a break-in, no. He was, but were the officers, so the question is almost, did the officers err in stopping and speaking to Justin Barassa, thinking he might have been part of the break and enter? 100%. There was no problem with them stopping and speaking to Justin Bress in the moment at the time.
The SIU, you mentioned that they had all the facts. The director, Joseph Martino, said that the usage of handcuffs on Justin Bress in that moment may have been overreach. Do you agree with Joseph Martino's assessment?
I do not. The reason for that is, so if I am dealing with someone and I believe in the moment, the officers use this word detention. I would have argued with you that they had grounds to arrest. And where I find that this becomes confusing in case law, because detention, when we detain someone, we can search the individual, right, for weapons to hurt themselves or us. Weapons. It's a weapons search. It's not an evidentiary search. It's weapon related. There's a detention. I would have argued that because where he was in proximity to his reaction, the ignoring of the officers, all of those things that kind of led up, the officers could have said, hey, actually, I think there's a nexus here. You might have reasonable grounds to arrest and then continue your investigation thereafter. But whenever there is a concern for safety, the officers have available to them, of course, the handcuffing piece. And so I don't know if, obviously the director has his opinion on that. We look at that, because handcuffing is also a use of force, right, according to the use of force wheel. So we flush that. I do not believe there was any issue with handcuffing the subject at the time.
And as far as the subject at the time goes, what made the officers think that Justin Barassa was involved in this break-in, other than he was walking down Richmond at 3:49 a.m. on October the 28th, 2021?
The officers have to, in their mind, say, okay, what do we know here about this break-in enter? And is there a reasonableness? Not is it 100% accurate, but is there a reasonableness that this individual, Mr. Barassa, walking down the street, also is involved in this? Could they be potentially involved in it? They have to make those assessments based on description, based on clothing, based on proximity to the scene. All of those pieces the officer weighs in. So knowing what they know about the scene, knowing what information's gone out over the air in relation to the break and enter, all of those aspects form what we would then infer to be reasonable grounds. So that's the officers in the moment at the time make that determination.
This officer is also involved in an SIU investigation for a civilian shooting in August of 2021. This officer, as you said to Daryl earlier, is still an active member of London Police. Should London people of London be concerned there's an officer who was involved in two shootings here that is obviously still active and working as a London Police officer?
When we have our members involved in an event, they are investigated first by SIU if there's a serious injury or death, and then internally by us. That's why you don't see officers' names go in. I'm not saying that's the same person. I'm not going to tell you that because it's an HR issue. They're investigated each in their own merit and whatever the discipline.
Don't patterns matter at some point if we have two in 2 months?
What does that mean, though? That's what you're making an inference.
I'm just wondering if you think patterns.
So let's say we would do our internal investigation. If there was a problem, if there was misconduct that came from that intern, if it was significant, it would be in formal hearing. Then the officer would be named. When it doesn't move to formal hearing, I cannot legislatively name the officer. Becomes an HR issue.
And very last thing, I appreciate the time. This is obviously something that has been very difficult for Justin Brass's family, and I've spoken to his parents. And what message would you have for them as we sit here and look at the facts surrounding the evening or the morning, we should say, that Justin Barrasso was killed?
It's tragic. And there's trauma. Like, there's trauma to his family. There is trauma to our officers. You know, is this what police sign up to do? Is this their goal? They signed up, put the uniform on that day, and decided, I'm going to go out and fatally shoot somebody in my shift. That's not what they want. You know, I think everyone is, you know, Justin Brass had parents. He had family. He had people that loved him. You know, these actions are not because the police are cruel, that the police want to harm someone, want to create heartache for family. You know, so I feel for them. No one wants to lose anyone. No one wants to lose their son. You know, but our officers, one of our officers almost died. And so it's hard for me in this position to balance that, because I have the responsibility about worrying about our people and what they're doing. And it's not whether or not you agree with how it unfolded. It's not for you and I to say. The officers are given use of force. They are given provisions under the criminal code to use that force. In this circumstance, they did so lawfully. But that doesn't mean there's not impact to the family. It doesn't mean that we are not mourning with them. No one wants to inflict that pain on anyone. Not to our officers, not to their families. You know, I said in the board meeting, you know, you sign up to be a police officer. Do you do that thinking you yourself? Is your goal you yourself to get charged criminally? No. You know, you're here to help. You're here to serve the community. But the set of facts, the situation was significant. They were in a critical event that evolved rapidly. And at the end of the day, you know, Justin Barrasso is killed. And he's, you know, and there's now grief for the family. And there's trauma to our officers in our whole building. So, you know, it's such a crazy position for me to try to balance that and sound empathetic. I worry about them. I also worry about our people. And one of our officers almost died that night. And so we, you know, you've got me kind of between a rock and a hard place. You know?
They would say that they're of the belief that an officer did not almost die that night. If they were here right now.
And that's, you know, what do they believe, right? They have so many questions, and they have to replay this. They know little pieces of everything. They see what's in that SIU report, and they can only imagine it. Do you ever expect that to happen? Do you know, you don't have all of the pieces of the story. I probably have more of the pieces of the story from what I've read. Am I the officer in the moment at the time? No. And so that's where we have inquests that come in and say, okay, like, how do we prevent the same set of things from happening again? Were there things that the police could have done differently? And that's where we see those recommendations come out of a coroner's inquest. You know, maybe that the family will find that helpful to answer some of these questions and to look at the timing. But the only caution I can say is, on the surface, from a, you know, 5,000 view, I don't think we can feel and know, and some of it is perception. You know, Justin Barrasso is a fit guy. There's a lot of things at play here that I could not even do justice articulating, and nor could the family or, in all due respect, yourself, really truly understand that. And so we come away with saying, whoa, like, what happened? You know, we do our comprehensive reviews, and, had there been a misstep by our people, it would have been informal hearing and would have been public. And I'm just here to tell you that wasn't the case. Yet it doesn't mean it wasn't
tragic.
That's
my conversation with Trish McIntyre, who's Deputy Chief of London Police. A lot there we're going to analyze, but first I want to remind you the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London, lifestyle with the drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. So there are the answers that you heard. You may have heard the microphone level change a little bit. There were a couple of times there where I didn't put the microphone in front of my own face. I was wanted to hear what she's saying. We were having kind of a bit of an exchange there. So that's why the levels would have sounded funny. I just didn't want anyone to come back and say, Craig, you edited this to make it sound out of context. That is the full unedited exchange between myself and Trish McIntyre, the Deputy Chief of London Police. And she's sticking to what's in the report. both from the SIU and in the internal report. She says that's the story that they think occurred. And that's the story that they've received from the officers who involved that night. And that's fine. And they've talked to the subject officer, unlike the SIU, which is good. I can't get over how I just feel that the time frame there doesn't make sense. The lack of injury to the officer doesn't make sense. The 45 seconds that apparently occurred where the officer was doing nothing other than, I guess, giving Bourassa a stern talking to doesn't make sense. The lack of injuries for Bourassa other than the gunshot doesn't make sense. And I asked about some of those specific circumstances, and the deputy chief said she didn't want to get into what happened that night because she wasn't there and I wasn't there. And that's fine. She's right. Neither of us were there. If we heard the real story of what had occurred that night, I don't think I would have had so many questions. I just don't think that that story, the timeline syncs up. And if you disagree with me, if you think that I'm way off base about that, feel free to let me know. You can send me an email, send me tweets, whatever you want, and tell me. But I just have a really difficult time with that version of the events. And like I said, I've been talking to some of you on Twitter and in emails and other ways that you can contact me on my Facebook page for the Craig Needles Podcast. It's there. Please follow it if you're on Facebook. And people have been saying that the ones that have reached out to me that have listened to these podcasts that I've done about this issue, they said, Craig, that just doesn't make sense to me. Something went wrong here. And yeah, I think it did. So I'm going to have more questions. And I know that people have said, what about the civilian oversight here? London Police Services Board, their civilian oversight. Well, that's Susan Toth. She's the chair of the London Police Services Board. Now, she didn't want to get into the operational stuff, but I'm going to ask her about it anyway. In this piece of audio that I got talking to Susan in the moments following the London Police Services Board meeting on Monday. Here's how the conversation sounded. I just first asked her for her reaction to the fact that there was a person killed by a London police officer in the city last year.
Yeah, there's never good news in a story like this. It's just difficult for everyone involved. Obviously, it was an incredible tragedy. It's not something that I think any police officer enters the police force ever expecting or ever hoping will happen to them. It is difficult for everyone. I think at least this provides, if nothing else, some element of closure in terms of at least knowing what the SIU has come to terms with, and then the internal investigation as well. I can only assume it's probably not over at this point, so we'll have to wait and see what happens from this point on.
Time frame, from Justin Bourassa was alive at 3:49 a.m. and 36 seconds. He had been shot by 3:51 and 1 second. There was apparently 45 seconds to a minute of choking in that time frame. Do you have questions about the timeline that was provided by the witness officer to the SIU? Have you read the report?
I've read the SIU report. That's a matter of public record. At this stage, we're not involved in any of those details. That's all I can say on that.
You have no concerns about the timing of that report? Doesn't seem like too tight a timeline to you?
As a police board member, we are not the experts in terms of specific policing. So we rely on SIU, we rely on internal, the professional standards branch, to make those determinations. And they cleared the officer in charge, and that is what the information that the board has.
Speak a little bit as well, the timeline to get this information out. This report by the SIU was done in mid-June. We've heard a lot about the uncertainty and the stress that can cause on family, on officers involved, witnesses. Do we need to get this information out quicker when the SIU has made a determination?
Yeah, no, I think it's always the balancing act between making sure the investigation is thorough, because that is what everyone needs, the families of the victims involved, the families of complainants, the complainant themselves, in situation obviously where the complainant is alive. However, that has to be balanced against the respect and dignity of ensuring that everyone knows the information as soon as that's available, because I think the waiting process for everyone, both complainant family members of complainant police officers, is very, very harmful. And so we will, the board will continue to try to push the SIU to make sure that those investigations happen in as timely manner as possible. And then beyond that, support for police officers who are going through that process. But, you know, we are not the ones who are in charge of SIU or resourcing the SIU, so there's very little that we can do to make those happen faster.
The deputy chief said that these officers conduct themselves with true excellence. She used those words multiple times. This is a situation where Justin Barrasso was not tased. A baton was not used in this situation. There was no evidence of that, at the very least. Would you agree with the assessment of that being true excellence, the way that these London police officers handled the moments leading to Justin Barrasso's death?
You know, those are questions that are operational in matter. So those are questions for you to ask the deputy chief and the chief.
So there it is. You've heard from Susan Toth. You have heard from Trish McIntyre, who's the deputy chief of London Police. And I am not satisfied by those answers. And look, I'm not going to lie. I don't know what more I'm going to get on those answers. I'm going to try, but I don't know what more I'm going to get. But for those of you who have tweeted me, those of you who have sent me emails, and those of you who have heard this podcast and shared it with other people, and I know that you're out there. I've seen the emails, I've seen the tweets and so forth. I just want you to know that I'm not done with this. I don't know what the next steps are going to be from an investigative perspective, from a journalistic perspective, but I'm not done with this. I think that there is more to be examined here. And hey, who knows what the results of that examination will be? All I know is that what we have been told about the 36-ish, somewhere in there, second span from the time that that London police vehicle goes into the alley where Justin Barrasso eventually wound up being shot. There's about a 36-second span between then and when Justin Barrasso apparently started choking a London police officer. I do not believe that we have the full, proper, and correct story about those 36 seconds. At the very least, I'm remarkably skeptical about what would or could have happened in that 36 seconds in comparison to what the SIU has said had occurred. As you heard me mention in my conversation with Trish McIntyre, this is a police officer who's under investigation for a shooting for the second time in the space of 2 months in 2021. Now, the police wouldn't confirm that, but London Free Press reporter Dale Carruthers has said that's the case, and I think Dale's word is pretty solid on that, so we're going to say that that is a fact, because no one has told Dale or me otherwise that this officer was involved in multiple shootings in the space of a couple months. Now, does that mean that something necessarily wrong happened with Justin Barrasso? That fact alone doesn't mean that, no, but it does make you scratch your head a little bit, doesn't it? Does make you wonder. Does make you think to yourself, hey, wait, what did happen in that alley that night? And we don't know. And we have heard one side of what happened in that alley. I have some questions about that side. And the other side, sadly, is Justin Barrasso's side, and he is not with us to tell the story. And I really, really wish that he was. Because, look, they're just, for 36 seconds, for it to escalate like that in 36 seconds, for Justin Barrasso to get the physical upper hand on two London police officers at the same time in 36 seconds? I have a really hard time with it. I have a really hard time with it, and I'm sorry. I know that that's not how people want to feel about their police service in their city, where there may have been something that happened here that shouldn't have. But I think that there need to be better answers to these questions. And I'm not necessarily expecting them from the deputy chief. You heard me ask the questions. She answered them. And she gets a lot of credit for standing there and saying, hey, I'm going to talk to you about this, Craig. Because there are some police service executives in this country who would not even consider talking to me about something like this. So I'm not saying that she herself necessarily needs to give better answers, but what I am saying is that the people who are supposed to investigate this, the Special Investigations Unit, they should have done a better job. they should have put the same test to this story that I did and realize, hey, wait a minute. If the police officer involved here hadn't even gotten out of his vehicle at 3:49 and 36 seconds, and Justin Barasa had been shot by 3:51 and 1 second, that doesn't leave a whole lot of time for there to be a story about something that leads to a 45 second to a minute chokehold, does it? If the chokehold was a minute, we're talking about 15 seconds that all that stuff's supposed to have happened in. It defies logic, doesn't it? Don't you think it defies logic? That's what I think. We have to wrap up here because, well, that's all there is, sadly, on this story right now. But when it changes, when things happen, we will let you know. The Craig Needles Podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London. Lifestyle with the drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warrencliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.